Howdy and welcome. One of these days I'll have a fancy intro. I guess that when I learned how to mix audio, you think it'd be as easy as mixing a video, but it certainly is not. So if you're listening, first off, welcome to a podcast where we don't really talk about photography very often. Being a photography podcast, you know, I think that might make it kind of weird. But sometimes we do. And today's one of those days. Excuse me for a second. She's going to start over again. There it is. Okay. I'm back. I am a Star Trek fan. I have been a Star Trek fan for some time. Since Kirk, Battlestar Galactica, Buck Rogers, Space 1999, things like that. So I wasn't exclusively Star Trek, but was always a huge, huge fan. Now, I recently started watching The Next Generation because that was the order of operations that I had come up with for myself. That because I had not seen The Next Generation because I spent most of that decade working way too much. And I had not seen Deep Space Nine because I spent that decade working way, way too much. And weirdly enough, all that money's gone. And as a matter of fact, everything I bought with any money I made back then is now gone. Which leads me to my next point. I watched, number one, I hate Picard. Let's get that out of the way. I'm not a fan. He's a pompous, overgrown, overblown excuse for a starship captain. You feel me? Okay, this is not about Picard. So I'll save that for tomorrow, for the next podcast. But I started watching Deep Space. I watched The Next Generation. I watched the first, I watched 30 of the first episodes, I watched 10 of the middle episodes, and then I watched the last 5 or 6 episodes. And then whatever miscellaneous ones came up on Pluto TV. So on Amazon, I watched it in order, but on Pluto TV, I just watched whatever's on so I can get the story and get the gist of what's going on. Because I'm not going to watch, 200 episodes of anything right now. So I don't have patience for it anymore. So after that was Deep Space Nine. I wasn't expecting much at all from Deep Space Nine. Benjamin Sisko didn't strike me as anything of note. It was a weird Star Trek that was on a space station. I never saw a reason to watch it. I didn't, it just didn't strike me as a good show. So whatever, many years later, I sit down last month and start watching it. And the very first episode, Sisko hates Picard. So then I automatically like Sisko because Picard is a megalomaniac who is guilty of war crimes and should be brought up on all types of charges, but yet he still roams the galaxy free as a bird with his own star. Okay, hold on. Relax. Don't get worked up. Okay. So I like Sisko because he doesn't like Picard. And I think it was maybe the second or third episode was they came upon the wormhole. It had to be the second episode. And in the wormhole is a being that they encounter that's new, that they're unaware of prior, and it is very curious about human life. And for the most part, they just want to destroy it. They want, you know, these alien creatures, they've viewed them as a threat, and they want to kill all of the people on Deep Space Nine. So, of course, Sisko is there to save the day, but they keep asking him, and if you're familiar with the episode, they're probing his mind, they're finding out what his story is. One of the aliens wants to kill him, another one of the aliens wants to save him, and is curious about what's going on, and I believe they're all one alien, but there's different parts to it, and they find out about his kid by probing his mind, they find out about his wife by probing his mind, and his wife died at the hands of Picard in a prior episode with the Borg, and Benjamin Sisko, they keep asking him, why do you exist here? Why do you exist here? And the whole episode, I'm thinking the same thing he's thinking. What are they talking about? I'm here because I'm an explorer. I'm a captain. I'm supposed to be seeing the universe and meeting new species and this and that and the other thing and all these things that we're supposed to be doing. But they keep asking, why do you exist here? Why do you exist here? And it's right. The answer is right in front of us as an audience because they really only ask the question at the scene of his wife's death and where he had to leave her body. And credit to Star Trek for having a upscale black couple, essentially, and she lives in the movie through flash. She lives in the series through flashbacks, but they have an upbeat black couple that is emotional and multidimensional and things like that. But they keep asking him, why do you exist here? And eventually, a couple minutes before the episode's over, he realizes they're not asking, they don't know English or how to communicate like we do verbally, but they keep asking as best that they possibly could, the aliens keep asking as best as they possibly could, why do you exist here? In their great power, they realize that Sisko had a traumatic event. And he was so hung up on that event that he couldn't progress past it. And all at once, it became clear what they meant when they said, why do you exist here? And he breaks down in tears. The episode's over and they move on. But it hit me. Because three years ago, I woke up from a depression. And I woke up from that depression, and I was married again. I was in Phoenix, and I knew why. It wasn't like I woke up from a coma or anything, but I knew why. But one day, my drive came back, and I said, you know what? Let's be a photographer. And as far as that drive goes, you know, I'd always known to love my wife and love my kid and take care of my family and things like that. I haven't always done it well, but I did it. And I woke up personally. And I was in Phoenix, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to start a photography company, it's going to have a podcast, and here we are, and to follow that plan. So if you have a plan that you need to follow, validate it. Make sure it's the best possible plan for you and the people in your life. And then check it again, and then follow that plan until you stop breathing. That's where I am right now. I'm following the plan until I stop breathing. And in that plan, I knew that I wasn't going to stop, and it wasn't really about the money. It wasn't about being a famous photographer, which there isn't such a thing. And it wasn't about buying the most gear, because if you do, you're not a photographer. It wasn't about any of that. It was about personal happiness. Something I had totally denied myself for many decades. And had, you know, no, there was no depth there in my soul to succeed personally. Go to work, 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 make money, and that's it. And like I said, I was married again. And let me preface that by saying, we like to think of dangerous people as a man with a hood and a gun and a knife in a dark alleyway. But that's not always the case. I used to work in the ambulance. I've had a grandma pull a gun on me and my partner. I did autopsies for a long time, not too long, but long enough. And I realized there that evil is in all of us, everyone. There is the capability of murder. There is murder in everyone you look at every day, 100%. So the idea that a dangerous person is a man with a gun and a knife in an alleyway, in a dark alleyway, chasing someone, that's not always the case. It rarely is. I've seen dangerous people in many different shapes and forms. But like I said, I was married again. And I moved my entire family. Well, I was about to California. Then we moved back to New Mexico. Now we're here. And I look back on that time and I can ask myself, now that I've had time to reflect on it, why did you exist there, Mike? Why did you exist there from a traumatic time in my life? And it totally changed the perspective of where I was in my life and what I would do with it next. One major important role, and I hope every man is listening to this, one major important thing I realize is my success becomes the inspiration for my family. I had it backwards. I put my family before my success. And that's incorrect. You cut grass, you buy a truck, you start a company, you get paid for it, you come home dirty, and that your kids see, that your wife sees, that shows in what you provide for your family. I would leave when I was a much younger man. I would leave my job when my kid was sick. I would quit my job when my wife wasn't feeling well and go home. And that's not what you're supposed to do. It doesn't help the situation, I found out. Just like jealousy, there's good jealousy and there's bad jealousy. Selflessness, there's good and bad. Selfishness, there's good and bad. And in that case, you kind of have to temper what you do and how you do it. Because imbalance in anything will throw the other thing much, much further off. So don't be ashamed to be a photographer, but be the best goddamn photographer you can be. I'm not living in an RV because I want to. I'm not living in an RV because I have to. I'm living in an RV because this RV is going to travel the state. I'm not traveling the world. I'm not going to South America. I'm not making these giant grandiose plans. I'm going to travel my own state and take pictures and talk to people and get paid to do it. That is the plan, and I'm sticking to it. Make up your plan. Stick to it until you don't breathe anymore. And that's your mark on the world. Now, recently, on another note, I had to, because there was another life of mine that we won't get into now, but I had the chance of speaking publicly. And I have never, ever, ever had a fear of speaking publicly. And I don't understand when that people that do have a fear of public speaking. It is awesome. Excuse me. I love public speaking. I love getting up on the mic and talking, which is weird because talking to a microphone now for a podcast was one of the scariest things I'd ever done. But I can get up in front of any room of people and deliver a message. And I have zero problem with that. So I had the opportunity for a 2-minute, 5-minute speech. And it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. I loved it. Absolutely awesome. And I can't wait to do it again. I literally can't wait to do it again. And I'm going to find every opportunity I can to get up on stage and talk into a microphone. I miss it. I really do. I don't know how it's going to fit into photography, but I'll find a way. I'll talk to people about taking portraits, which honestly, I think, you know, I mentioned in a prior podcast that I whittled this down from many, many different possibilities in photography that I was going to take up a discipline in. And portrait photography for me is number one. It was number one in the beginning 4 years ago when I made the plan, and it's number one today. You know, there was real estate photography, blah, blah, blah. I tried it all, and the stuff I don't like, I don't do anymore. But portrait photography, I got to find a way to fit portrait photography and public speaking. But I think if I could talk to people about the importance of getting your picture taken, which I think is massively important, massively important. Yeah, there's other things, you know, there's other things that we have to worry about, yes. But for marginalized people who in my country, which is all I can speak to, that have been made to be and feel and treated as less important, as far as I'm concerned, they need to see the importance of an accurate representation of you as a person. During the first part of this pandemic, I couldn't find anybody to take a portrait. I didn't feel confident with asking. So I said, all right, I got a face. Taking portraits is pictures of faces. So I'll just use my own face. And you have no idea how hard it is to take a picture of yourself. I hate looking at my own face. I don't want to edit my own face. It was just an obscene idea as far as I was concerned. I did not want to do it, but I did it for a year and I took some horrendous pictures of myself. Blurry, out of focus. I have manual focus lenses from 1985, 1977 that do not help the issue at all. I tried rulers, measuring the distance between my eye and the focal plane. I tried all types of nonsense. I even ended up eventually buying an automatic lens, that would focus on its own, and it didn't focus very well because it was a cheap Yungno lens. I tried it all. And in the end, I got probably 100 good pictures of myself. And self-confidence wise, I felt the boost. 100% I felt the boost in my own self-confidence. How to better present myself to the world, how to hold my head, how to sit up, and all these things translate into how I talk to my clients now. And you move that arm a little bit to the left, turn it this way. I know this is uncomfortable. I did it for myself. This, you know, I took my own picture and I hated looking at my own face for a little while, but then I got used to seeing me. I began to see myself for who I was. And eventually, slowly, I became more comfortable with who I am and my own face. And it was strange, very, very strange. But that power felt not good, but reassuring that I have a face that matters. And that is something I think is sorely lacking in today's world. The majority of our population thinks that it's okay to take a picture of yourself with a 15 millimeter cell phone lens, when in truth, you're not looking at your own face. I'll say it again. You cannot take a picture of yourself. Not with a cell phone. Not with a 15 millimeter wide angle panorama lens. You can't do it. In the end, yes, I was able to get a couple of good pictures out of 1,000 bad ones. But in the end, it's a dance. When a portrait photographer comes in the room, he is doing so much more than you know. He is working on you psychologically. He is working on you personally. He is working on you mechanically. He is putting your arms and legs and head and chin in the right place. He is bringing out the best you. And if you do nothing else, even if you say to the portrait photographer, hey, you know what? This is going to sound strange. I want you to take the picture, but I don't want to see it. Take the picture, pick 3 good ones. I don't want to see them. Put them on a memory card and have it sit until next year. Do that. Do something. But go get an accurate representation of you. And then compare it to the pictures of the selfies on your phone. So you want to flip back and forth. And look, man, my nose doesn't look that terrible. My eyes are reasonably spaced. Or my eyes are really effing weirdly spaced. And it shows in a normal portrait. Because you absolutely cannot have good self-image with a bad image of you. You just can't. It doesn't even make sense for you to think that you can have a good self-image when you're looking at poorly done images of yourself. And one thing's for sure, a 15 millimeter lens, there is a ton, you may not know this, but there is a ton of distortion. So you are looking at a distorted, misshapen picture of you. And you can't figure out why you feel bad about yourself. And that's what bothers me about the marginalized people in the world today. They don't have accurate images of themselves. They don't have pictures of those past generations. They think they're here on this planet alone, when in truth, they very much are not. There's grandma and grandpa and dad and the dog and the car and the blah and the blah and blah. That gives you a connection to your past. But we don't do that anymore. We take these cell phone pictures and think that that's enough, but that's not enough. What you need is an accurate representation. A good picture of grandma. Good picture of grandpa. And their first car. And to think that the cell phone's going to do that, cell phone doesn't do it. There is a psychology in, hey, he's coming to take a picture of us. We're going to get dressed up. We're going to look nice. I had a client that I told I was going to take a rough and ready, dirty, tough guy portrait of this guy, but he went and got shaved up, you know, got his hair done and everything. I said, all right, fine. In a laughing way. All right, fine. Let's see what you got. And and he hasn't seen the picture yet, but it was one of my best pictures. One of my absolutely best pictures, and I couldn't have been happier. Maybe he'll hate the picture. I don't know. But one thing I really, really want to do is really start focusing on pictures of men. Because not that men are a marginalized group in a large way, but more and more we are castrating our men to the point where they're more that laughy sort of jokey man from TV who doesn't know anything. My wife is the boss. Your wife's not the fucking boss. You're not the fucking boss. You and your wife are evenly yoked in service. So you both are the boss. You work together. You're a team, like two oxes in a yoke. Two horses pulling a plow. There isn't a horse in the front and a horse in the back. There's two horses side by side pulling together. That's what a marriage is. That's what a relationship is. And we've lost that. And maybe, with a few pictures, I can start to push that ship back in the right direction, where men not only see that their wife and their woman is their teammate, but to see that they are a worthwhile member of that team. Maybe a good picture will help them see that. It helped me see a lot. It helped me see that I'm a badass photographer. I could fuck it up with a camera. Translates to I can do a good job. Sometimes I slip into it. Sometimes I slip out of it. But every once in a while I get a good picture. And every now and again I get a good picture of myself. And to see where the American male is now, as opposed to where it was when I was a kid, is kind of sad. I mean, there was GQ magazine and Billy D. Williams and Superfly and all those guys. That's who we looked up to. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having sex with the devil while wearing pink assless chaps, but I'm saying there has to be more to being a man than, you know, showing up like that with your pants down around your ankles. And your hood on, in public, indoors, in your car, with a hood on. Why? You're cold? Bullshit. I come from the suit and tie era. I wore a three-piece suit and carried a briefcase in elementary school, which may explain some of the ass whipping. I don't know. Could be true. Could, may not be true. But it could be true. And it just, strikes me as weird that we have all the cameras in the world right now, and we still don't understand the psychology of photography. We take these weirdly distorted pictures of ourselves in bikinis and dark clubs, and I don't know, it seems counterproductive. Well, what do I know? I'm just a black guy from New Jersey, right? I could be talking out my ass right now for all I know. I know one thing's for sure. I would love to take as many good portraits of people as I can. And speaking of photography, I want a Nikon F4S. Yeah, that's the one. Nikon F4S. I was looking for a camera that still shoots film, but has all the advantages of the modern DSLR. And the Nikon F6 seems to be pretty awesome at that. And I think I want that. I think I want a new one from Japan. But I also want the Nikon F4 because it is outrageously heavy. And but it seems very simple. It seems very close to a film SLR and has some of the advantages like autofocus to a modern DSLR. And Nikon lenses all are the same, so bingo. Oh, God. Sometimes the bad guy isn't wearing a hood or a knife. How are you doing? How are you making out? The next time that sun comes up wherever you are, if it's coming up right now, I want you to smile because it's sunrise. Wherever you are, when that sun comes up the next time, I want you to remember that you matter, that somebody loves you. If nobody else is going to love you, don't come looking for me because I ain't. I'm kidding, all right? I'm trying to make you feel better. Damn. Motherfuckers get all sensitive and shit. Remember that I love you. Remember I care about you. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be hollering at you right now. But what do I know? I'm just a black guy from New Jersey.